Fangoria Presents The Narrow Caves is brought to you by Shudder. Shudder is the Netflix for horror, where you can stream great thrillers, horror, and suspense for $4.99 a month or just $49.99 for the entire year. I watched a few Stephen King movies on Shudder this weekend, including Pet Sematary, Cujo, and Salem's Lot. I'm also pretty excited to watch some Alfred Hitchcock films that I haven't seen. They have all types of movies and series, from the classics to modern favorites, and even some originals too, like A Discovery of Witches that hit Shudder on January 17th. And they add new shows and films weekly. To try Shudder for free for 30 days, go to Shudder.com and use promo code CAVES. That's Shudder.com. Promo code CAVES. That's Shudder.com. Promo code CAVES. The following contains explicit and sexual content. Listener discretion is advised. Previously on The Narrow Caves.
What were you reading last night?
A book.
What's it about?
Men who mind their own business.
Do you usually harass the woman whom you invite to dinner?
Only when I'm nervous. What changed your mind? Why'd you track me down?
I had a dream.
My mom died.
Was it unexpected?
She'd been dealing with health problems for a while, though nobody knew exactly what was wrong. We still don't. Leave your beer in the kitchen and your shoes in the hall.
The lanky fellow approaches the shelf and withdraws the tome, the corners of which are gilded. He opens the cover. Inside is an inscription. Remembrances of my early childhood, 1923 to 1928. Walter turns the yellow page and sees the next one, which is covered with dense, immaculate handwriting. At present, he sits beside the luminous window and begins to read. It is 1923. The 10-year-old boy, Gregory, returns to his dark bedroom from his final encounter with the crooked man who lies slain in the cavern nook. The slender boy is shivering and dirty. Quietly, he shuts the door. His entire body shakes with fear, but he is long past the point of crying. Training his flashlight forward, Gregory takes wobbly steps towards his bed. Something appears on the floor at the edge of the luminous beam. The slender boy pauses and lowers the flashlight 2 inches. Resting at the foot of his bed is a burlap sack. Alarmed by this unexpected sight, Gregory pans his flashlight in all directions. His bedroom appears to be empty. The slender boy pads to the burlap sack, which he then kicks with his foot. This minor assault receives no response. Leaning over, Gregory pinches one corner of the bag and lifts. Onto the wooden floor clatter rings, necklaces, and pendants, all of his mother's missing jewelry. The slender boy goes to the window that is overlooking the small lake. The pane is partly raised. Gregory eyes the night. Clouds cover the moon, and the unclear world is comprised of charcoal and black shapes.
Leave me alone, please, whoever you are. Whatever you are.
The slender boy closes the window, fastens the latch, turns away, walks to his bed, and climbs beneath the sheets. Something clicks. And Gregory looks at the window. On the far side of the glass looms a pale, ghostly face that has bright red eyes. Frightened, the slender boy whimpers once and pulls the covers over his head.
Fangoria presents The Narrow Caves. Written by S. Craig Zoller. Directed by Keith Reynolds. Starring Wyatt Russell, Lily Simmons, Vincent D'Onofrio, and Will Patton as the narrator.
Chapter 3.
The hunk of moonlight has moved a few inches during the time that Walter has been reading. Anxiously, his eyes scan another page within the leather-bound book. His nerves are pulled tight, and he looks around the room, almost expecting to see someone watching him. The only other inhabitant is Ruby, who sleeps facing the open window. He calms himself and returns his gaze to the handwritten prose. The lanky fellow reads a paragraph and looks to the next page. Startled, Walter raises his gaze. The bed is empty.
Ruby?
The lanky fellow closes the book and again looks at the mattress, which contains only pillows and twisted blankets. Walter hastens around the bed and stops. Lying on the wood floor and dressed in a black nightie is Ruby. Her eyes are closed and her body is curled up.
Ruby.
Concerned, the lanky fellow kneels beside the pale woman, who does not appear to be awake.
What?
I'm fine. The tests didn't show anything.
Perplexed by this statement, Walter appraises Ruby. Her eyes are still closed.
Ruby.
Walter gently touches Ruby, who then flinches and awakens. Confused, the pale woman looks around the moonlit room and at her lanky guest. No recognition shows upon her face.
It's me. It's Walter. Are you okay?
How did I get down here?
You fell out of bed. Are you okay?
I think so.
Walter scoops Ruby up from the floor, stands upright, and returns her to the bed.
Oh. You're much stronger than I thought.
I'm good at exceeding low expectations.
The pale woman slides a hand down the lanky fellow's abdomen and into his boxer shorts. Things start to take shape.
Your ego feels healthy.
Perhaps your hand is full of vitamins.
Ruby moves her unseen hand back and forth as Walter climbs onto the bed and is enfolded by pale legs. Forty minutes have passed. Ruby lies asleep beneath the covers next to Walter, who is still wide awake. Many thoughts percolate inside of his head as he looks at the ceiling. The lanky fellow attempts to disentangle his legs from the blankets that are twisted around him, but he seems to only further complicate the matter. Fabric rustles as Walter rolls to one side of the bed and looks at the pale woman. His brow wrinkles in puzzlement at what he sees. Silver hairs hang from her mouth, which is closed. Walter leans closer and eyes these glimmering strands, which waver in the small currents that come from Ruby's nostrils.
Ruby?
Walter reaches over and gently taps Ruby's shoulder.
Hey.
Walter brings his right hand to Ruby's face and pokes the strange hairs with his index finger. Silver strands curl around the probing digit. Startled, the lanky fellow withdraws his hand and tries to rise from the bed. His legs flail within the tangled sheets but do not win free.
Ruby!
Walter struggles against the blankets that tighten inexorably about his legs and abdomen. Grunting, the lanky fellow fights the bedding, which is comprised of myriad silver hairs.
Help, Ruby!
Sheets snap taut. Glowing silver, the bedding cracks his legs in wrong directions. Tibiae and fibulae shatter. Blood darkens the bedding. Agonized, Walter grabs Ruby by the shoulders and shakes her back and forth. The pale woman opens her eyes, which are completely black. 6 weeks later, a shuddering, paler, and short-haired Walter wakes up from his nightmare in his neatened bedroom and looks at Ruby, who is asleep, nude, and curled up beside her host. It takes the lanky fellow a moment to jettison his terrible visions and relax into the present. The sight, feel, and scent of Ruby stir Walter, who then leans forward and kisses her on the back of her neck. Partly awake, the pale woman responds with a quiet moan. Hands clasp breasts, and fingers squeeze muscles as the girl twists around and climbs on top of her partner.
Oh, you feel so good. So right.
So do you.
Undulating, the couple find a deep, slow rhythm.
I think that I'm starting to believe in fate.
A smirk shines upon Walter's face as he caresses Ruby.
And if it doesn't exist, I am a very lucky woman.
For a moment, the coupling duo look into each other's eyes.
I love you.
Blushing, the pale woman leans over and covers the lanky fellow's face with her long black hair.
I love you too.
Pop music blares from fried speakers and a disco ball turns as people on skates alternately clutch and shove off of the blue-carpeted walls of a roller skating rink. Sitting in a bright orange booth eating pizza and drinking fountain soda through red-striped straws are Walter and Jason. The Asian fella looks uncharacteristically concerned.
She wants me to meet her father and brothers, see where she grew up, that sort of thing.
Walter looks out into the swirling skaters. Amongst these rolling bipeds is Ruby, who wears black clothing and silver skates. Her circuit is on the outermost perimeter.
You've only been seeing her for a semester. Isn't it kind of early for this sort of thing?
She's not looking forward to going back home. Mainly because her mother passed away, and if I can make her feel better about it, I'm happy to go.
You're supposed to go camping.
Well, let's go another time.
Jason leans back in his seat, eyes Walter, and deliberates on whether or not he should speak candidly.
What?
This is who you are.
What do you mean by that?
I'll explain.
Jason pauses as Ruby skates past the table and grins at Walter, who waves in reply. The pale woman circumvents an old couple who hold hands and vanishes.
So you know how chicks have all these preposterous rules, right? Don't give a guy your number unless he has his own car. Don't French a guy on the first date. Don't sleep with a guy until the third date.
Ruby didn't hold out on me.
That's not my point. What I'm saying is that they have rules. A complicated chick system that they use to test guys. But as a result, what they get is not the real guy. It's the guy trying to beat the chick system. A guy strategically moving pieces on a game board so that he can get a piece.
What's the point of this lecture?
The point is that a girl never knows who she's really dating until the tests are over. That's when a guy's really himself for the first time. And there's an equivalent for friendship, the time when a friend knows exactly how good his friend is.
When's that?
When the guy falls in love with one of those.
The Asian fella points at the pale woman who currently veers around the roller skating rink.
How a guy treats his friends once he's in a relationship shows who he really is.
Irked, the lanky fella frowns.
I'm in love. For the first time ever, and in a relationship. I've added somebody important to my life, and I have less time for other people. It's simple arithmetic.
There's a difference between giving your friends less time and turning them into low priorities.
Jason, you're being...
A lot of guys are like this. Both my older brothers are. I just didn't think you were.
Hurt, Walter looks at Jason.
I'm sorry I canceled. When I get back, we'll go camping.
The Asian fellow does not look convinced.
I promise.
Jason nods his head.
I hope so.
Ruby rolls up to the booth and slides her arms around Walter, who then kisses her lips and returns to her world.
Upstate New York.
A cabbie drives his vehicle around a curving road. Sitting in the back seat, Walter and Ruby admire their rural surroundings. Gold, orange, and brown leaves hang upon the trees that stand in this mountainous environment. Seeing something, the pale woman points through the near window.
That's the footbridge where I kissed Mike Lancaster.
The lanky fellow eyes the historic site, which is dimly visible in the blue-gray dusk.
That's the one who turned into a car thief?
Yes, though this was before his life of crime. In puberty.
The cabbie dials the wheel clockwise and the vehicle rounds a bend. A white mansion drifts into view. A pale hand gestures at this edifice.
Oh, my first best friend lived there until she was 12.
Jennifer Baxter?
Mm-hmm.
Where's she now?
I don't know. Something weird happened to her, though I never found out exactly what.
Walter watches the white mansion, which the winding road soon hides behind branches and a mountainside.
It smells nice here. A little familiar for some reason.
We're close.
Ruby points through the windshield. The cab rolls into the driveway of an old, well-maintained two-story house that is made of wood and stone. One bottom floor window is illuminated, and a large gray luxury car is parked off to the side. A body of water and a vast woodland property sit behind this large home. Rolling across crackling gravel, the cab nears the walkway. The taxicab stops. In the back seat, Walter glances at Ruby, whose face shines with concern.
What's wrong?
The front door is open.
The pale woman gestures at the entrance, and the lanky fellow looks at the door, which is 2 feet ajar.
Maybe he left it open for us while he took a shower or something?
No. My dad's a very private person.
Walter and Ruby step out of the taxicab and look up the topiary-lined walkway at the entrance. The pale woman then eyes the lighted window and sees nothing behind the curtain. At present, she withdraws a $20 bill.
Here, let me get the...
No, you've done more than enough by just coming out here with me.
The cabbie claims the 20 and pulls a latch. There's a thunk, and the trunk opens like the mouth of an alligator. Walter and Ruby remove their luggage and packages from the tail of the vehicle. The lanky fellow shuts the trunk and claims both suitcases while the pale woman cradles a pile of gifts. Both of them proceed to the walkway. At the far end of the path, the front door slams shut. Startled, Ruby drops one of her boxes.
Father?
Walter gauges Ruby in an effort to determine how concerned he should or should not be over this situation. Gravel crackles, and headlights fling shadows across the yard. The pale woman turns to the cab and waves at the driver.
Can you wait until we get inside?
Sure thing, lady.
Walter walks with Ruby toward the front door. On either side of them stand irregularly shaped topiaries. Headlights cast an array of twisted shadows in these spindly growths. The couple's footfalls thud upon the wooden walkway. Preceding them is their conjoined, bobbing shadow. Ruby claims the wrought iron knob, turns her hand, and pushes the door open.
Wait. Let me go first.
I appreciate your gallantry, truly, but I'm the one he'll recognize.
Then let's go together.
Ruby and Walter step into the high-ceilinged receiving room, where bright headlights toss their shadows across marble tiles and oaken stairs. The pale woman reaches for the wall and flips a switch. A dim, warm light shines from above.
Should I tell the driver he can go, or would you rather...
Oh. Walter and Ruby turn around, look outside, and see the cab, which is reversing out of the driveway.
Looks like he's dismissed himself.
Static crackles loudly over an old blues song as the cabbie backs his vehicle toward the road. Slowly, the automobile nears the street. Monitoring the mirrors, the driver cuts the wheel and angles onto the road. Headlights flash across the woods nearby and briefly glimmer upon a pair of red eyes that watch from between the trees. Oblivious of this eerie onlooker, the cabbie shifts gears and drives off.
Been listening to The Narrow Caves, written by S. Craig Zoller, directed by Keith Reynolds, produced by Dallas Saunier and Keith Reynolds, executive producer Will Evans, featuring Wyatt Russell, Lily Simmons, Vincent D'Onofrio, and Will Patton as the narrator, co-starring Hunter Hargrave, Lindsey Graham, Ann Beyer, Sarah Ragsdale, Mike Schrader, Ian Ferguson, Rico Fajardo, Jeannie Tirado, Eric Vail, Jeffrey Schmidt, Aaliyah Tavakolian, John Michael Tatum, Christopher Savitt, and Brandon Potter. Sound design, Foley, and sound mix by Lindsey Graham. Original score by Binary Reptile.
In the next chapter.
This place is nice. Has that elegant old world kind of atmosphere.
It has an abundance of history.
Where was his family from?
His parents came over from Germany and Poland.
And from what places did your mother's ancestors originate?
Russia. I wasn't able to sleep because you were babbling. And
I was babbling?
Can we please...
What did I say?
Something about your mother. You don't ever talk about what happened.
It isn't your business.
It is my business.
You had no right to read that.
Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite shows. Follow Fangoria on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @Fangoria.